RNZ National. The albatross is a bird that usually mates for life. They pick a partner and that's it. And given they can live for over 50 years, it's quite easy to see them in human terms. In a new Royal Society study, which happened over 15 years in the Falkland Islands, researchers found that climate change is causing albatross pairs to divorce. Warming waters have meant that the birds are having to travel further for food and they're becoming more stressed. And apparently this is leading to the uncoupling of lifelong albatross partners. Dr. Graeme Elliott, Principal Science Advisor at DOC, has been studying albatrosses for more than 30 years and he's with us now. Kia ora, Graeme.
Kia ora, Karen.
This is sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's horrible. And there's worse stories too, Karen. We haven't observed the same divorce rates amongst New Zealand. For starters, I suppose I work on Antipodean albatrosses and Gibson's albatrosses. These are wandering albatrosses that nest on Antipodes and the Auckland Islands. And they only nest in New Zealand. They're really our birds. And we haven't observed the same sort of divorce stuff in our birds, but that might be because we haven't looked, because you don't really notice the divorce going on so much because they all look the same. So the only way you can tell the divorce has happened is if you see the bands on the birds. We band all the birds, so you get to see when divorce has changed. But I haven't noticed it, and you'd have to do a big trawl of our data to find out. But in recent years, we've noticed a much worse thing, and it's also tied up with climate change. Is up until about 2005, the wandering albatrosses, these two albatrosses I'm talking about, were doing really well in New Zealand. They were recovering from a bit of a slaughter that happened in the 70s and 80s because of longline fishing. And the fishing had tidied up its act a bit and it had declined as well. So the birds were doing good. And me and my partner, Cass, started studying these birds in the early 90s, and for the first 15 years, they were doing great. The numbers are going up. And then in 2005, they suddenly started going down, and we saw all these... And they went down because the females were disappearing, and we saw all these male birds standing around in our study areas with no mates, looking for a new mate, and of course they couldn't find a new mate because of the terrible shortage of birds. And the story that sort of evolved out of this is that in about 2005, must have been some sort of tipping point reached with climate, and we noticed that our birds were suddenly going further than they used to go, and their nesting success plummeted. So it was kind of like they were having to work harder to get the food they needed to raise the chicks, but they weren't getting enough of it. So that their nesting success dropped, and they spread out. They went further and further. And by going further, they brought themselves into contact with fishing fleets in the sort of tropical parts northeast of New Zealand that they didn't end in the Tasman Sea, places they didn't used to go so much. And we think they're being killed in huge numbers by longline fishing boats fishing in international waters.
Oh, gee.
And so we've got this horrible situation on the island where we've got all these male birds standing around waiting for their mate to turn up, and she won't because she's dead, and then hoping to find another mate, which they won't because there's a shortage of females. And so the one phenomenon is all these males standing around doing nothing much, and then we've also got a few male-male pairs have turned up in recent years. So we've got these sort of gay couples comprising something between 2 and 5% of our study population are now these male-male pairs. And the male-male pairs are birds that have previously had partners and had ordinary breeding histories, but they've lost their partner and are kind of in desperation because albatrosses need a mate. they've taken up with other males. So... You know, so the sad thing is all these males standing around with no mates, and it's actually a little bit cheering to see the males standing around. At least they've got a friend. But it's a pretty depressing situation.
It is. It's easy to see an albatross in human terms. Apparently, Graeme, they greet each other warmly after they've been apart for a while.
Yeah, well, they are amazing. So their courtship is really kind of human-like because they're quite long-lived things, you know, probably 40, 50, 60 years. And so they leave the island after they hatch, you know, and they're away for about 5 years. And then for the next few years, they do this sort of courtship stuff. So they do a lot of sort of speed dating. And there's elaborate courtship dances and singing goes with it. And over a few years, they gradually pair up. And so they're sort of like our pair bonds, that, you know, that take a long time to establish, and they're enduring once they've started. But they don't spend much time together because when they raise a chick, they greet each other at the beginning of the season and they mate, and and that's great, but then they take turns on the egg, so they only see each other for a few minutes when they swap over at the egg. And then once the chick's raised, once the chick's hatched and it can be left, the adults take turns at feeding it, but they don't see each other at all. So they're only ever together for a few, maybe a week or two at the beginning of each season. And when you see them come together at the beginning of the season, it's really amazing because they clearly are just pleased to see each other. You know, they can see each other coming, you know, because I can't recognise them, but they can. They can see their mate coming in the distance and they kind of get all excited about it. And then when they get together, they do this lovely dance and they yell at each other. And then they do this mutual preening where they sort of give each other little kisses. And then they'll sit down, and, you know, birds that are long-term mates sit down, and they sit down touching each other like we'd sit down with our partner on the sofa, you know, cuddling up. They sort of do that kind of thing. And it's really endearing thing to see. And you do a lot of anthropomorphising about it because you look at it and you think, oh, that's really human-like behaviour.
Yeah, I wondered what the situation was after they had bred. Did they go off and fly solo?
Well, even when when they lay, one of them stays behind and sits on the egg and the other one takes off and fills up and then comes back, and then the one that was on the egg takes off. So they're all solo and they go miles. You know, they fly away several thousand kilometres on these journeys, you know, when they're taking shifts on the egg. So all their flying at sea is solo. I suppose they might bang into each other, you know, because once they've finished nesting, then these big albatrosses, the ones we're studying, have to take a year off. Because it takes them a whole year to raise a chick, so they have to take a year off to get up enough condition to do it again. So they're flying around for that whole year, and they might bang into each other, but we've had radio tags on birds, you know, pairs of birds, and they don't fly around together. They might occasionally cross paths, but yep, they spend all their time alone, and then they come together excitedly and match up again.
That's incredible. What you described about the New Zealand birds, it is a similar situation because on the Falklands, because they don't come back, that's when they split up. But they have the advantage there that there are female birds.
I suppose, well, I sort of, after I read that paper, I was thinking a lot about how that sort of might work. But I think they said it in the paper too, that when conditions are rough, the birds, well, our birds only breed every 2 years, and they'll sometimes decide to take a year off just simply because they're not in good enough nick to breed, so they'll take a year off. And when that happens, of course, your partner turns up at the island expecting to meet you, all primed to go, and you don't turn up. So guess what? He or she does. She finds another mate. And then the next year, of course, the bird left behind will have found a new mate, and then they both turn up in the following year, and I imagine it's extremely embarrassing. So rough conditions at sea, you know, lack of food because of global warming or even stronger winds or weaker winds that make it hard for the birds to get around mean that they don't put on the condition they need, so they'll turn up late or they'll not turn up at all. And not turning up seems to be grounds for divorce amongst albatrosses.
Yes, and when it said also that 1-3%, only 1-3% would split up in the albatross community, and now up to 8% are doing that.
Yeah, modern times.
Yeah, it is. That's another thought too. Perhaps they just have to evolve like humans.
Well, no, I think it is. I think it's the rough times, and partly, of course, the divorce is a response to the rough times, because when they're not breeding very well because they're having rough time, they'll look for a new mate because they think, of course, they always blame their partner. So if they breed unsuccessfully, they're likely to think, I could do better with another mate, and so they look for another mate. I'm anthropomorphising terribly, but that's the sort of mechanism that goes on. So if you fail at breeding, you're more likely to divorce, and of course rough conditions at sea, global warming and changing weather means that you're more likely to fail in your nesting, so you're more likely to divorce.
And what about the ones who are here that are male partners? They can never have a chick.
No, it's a little bit sad. At least they get a bit of company while they're hanging around. So, yep, and some of these, well, one of these pairs anyway that I can remember really well, they've been together now for at least 3 or 4 years, so they're quite faithful. So we had a little bit of an interesting episode last year because they're two reasonably old males, and albatrosses tend to like partners of about the same age. So they've been rejected by most of the young females that turn up. But last year we had a young female turn up And she was interested in these two boys, and so she went over and started courting with them. And that was a bit of a disaster for that established male-male pair, because, the two boys had previously been sharing the same nest, you know, and cuddling up like a couple. But after this girl came along, one of them moved away about 50 metres and built a new nest.
I love it. So then what happened?
Yeah, well, I don't know. We're really keen to see what happened this year, whether that made up their differences. Because the girl caused all this mess, she was a young thing, and so she went off and found herself a young bloke. She didn't need those old fellows. They didn't get anything out of their courting with that young woman.
They've both flown off into the great unknown, and then they'll come back and partner up again?
Yeah. So they've all flown away, and so we're heading down to the island again soon, sort of itching to know what's happened to all our birds. How they rearranged.
Yeah. What island was that? Did you say?
Well, this is the Antipodes
Island. Oh, the Antipodes Island. Wow. Yep. When are you going?
Well, we always have trouble jacking up boats and arranging things, so we're planning to go probably just after Christmas. But I'll tell you in a week.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Oh, an incredible story. It's sad, it's tragic, it's comic, it's everything. It should be a drama.
Yeah, there's a big conservation message, and I have to plug it, Karen, is that these birds, so the climate change has caused them to go places they shouldn't, but they're being killed by fishing boats. They're being killed by fishing boats. Some are being killed in New Zealand, but mostly it's happening outside our waters, and we've got to do something about it. The rate of decline is horrific. You know, they're going down 5 or 6% per year, heading for nowhere. So we've got to influence foreign fishing fleets to get their act together, because there's things you can do not to catch albatrosses. You can fish in the dark, because the birds don't find the bait. The way these longline fisheries work is they're baiting their hooks with squid, and then the lines sink into the water to catch the tuna, and the birds are grabbing the baits just before they sink. So the quicker your lines sink, the less birds you catch. And so the fishing boats can weight the lines, and some of them do and some of them don't. And they can put these streamers out the back of the boats, which scare the birds away from the baits as they're being set in the water. And they can put the most sophisticated tools people can use is they can put the hooks in little pods, which don't open until the hook's deep in the water beyond the reach of albatrosses. So there's lots of things that fishing people can do and are not doing. And we've got to find ways to persuade them.
Well, maybe we can just bring back the whole concept of a curse on them if they kill one.
Yeah. The ancient mariner thing, yeah.
Yes. I mean it seriously. All right, Graham. Well, thank you very much. As I said, it's sad and happy at the same time, but mostly sad.
Yeah, mostly sad, but there's a few laughs in it, I suppose. Yep.
Got to laugh. Graham, thank you very much.
No problem. See you, Karen.